encourage that. But yeah, come on, it's great tradition. I'll give you a great story. When Nashville entered the league and player scores a hat trick, right? The people start throwing their hats on the ice, people who know anything about hockey. And the security people are saying, "You don't throw anything on the ice! Don't throw anything on the ice!" Not understanding what tradition it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the hockey's got, well, all sports have all kinds of weird traditions, but hockey has several that don't translate well into other sports.
Yeah.
But that's why it's called a hat trick.
Or Nashville throwing fish onto the ice is another tradition they have.
Or the rats.
Or the rats. The rats are great.
Yeah. And, again, I told this story on these airwaves before, and you know it. Scott Mellenby was the guy who originated the whole idea of the rat trick, because there was in the old Miami Arena, which actually wasn't that old, but was in a lousy part of town, a rat got into the Panthers' dressing room, and it was Mellenby who whacked it and hit against the wall and killed the rat. And then he scored a couple of goals in the game, so one of the days, it was John Van Beesbrug who said he got a rat trick. And from that point forward, people started throwing rats onto the ice. That was their final run in like their second or third year of existence.
Yeah.
Yeah. And ever since then, that became part of their tradition. But that's the great thing about the NHL. Every team's got something.
Yeah.
But continuing.
So looking at some other playoff matchups. Where you hit on those? Jets Avalanche, Matt. This was an interesting one. I don't know if you saw the final score.
They
7-6.
Wow, in a playoff game.
In a playoff game. In a playoff game that does not feature Connor McDavid.
Yeah. Well, Connor McDavid and no defense.
Yeah. I mean, but the Avalanche are kind of forming into that because the Avalanche, you know, they don't have a great defensive defense. I mean, of course, Cale Makar and Devon Taves are a great line. Not the best at 5-on-5. So, I mean, their 5-on-5 stats have gone down significantly. Their defensive stats have gone down significantly.
It gets better. Hellebuyck in goal makes 40 saves, allowing 6.
Yeah.
So, this was an absolute shooting gallery.
Yeah. And that's just credit. And again, it's not like the Jets have a bad offense. They have a great offense. It's the fact that Colorado's offense is amazing. I mean, you look at Cale Makar, Arturi Lehkonen, Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen. I mean, these are some very, very good players on the offensive end. Valeri Nichushkin, you can throw that name in there as well. So it's going to be hard to shut down those star players, and because of that, I have a feeling this entire series is going to be a shootout. Really, any series that the Avalanche are in is probably going to end up being a shootout.
But this is crazy. Alexander Georgiev made 16 saves?
Yeah.
Is that right?
And Georgiev has been a problem for the Avalanche. Ever since they lost Darcy Kuemper over to Washington after they won the Cup, they have not been able to find a goalie to replace him. And again, Georgiev has been serviceable, but he's not really a playoff caliber goalie.
Well, he didn't get challenged. Well, he makes 16, allows 7. That's like a lacrosse statistic.
Yeah. Be a great lacrosse statistic.
Yeah, that's halfway decent, but that's not going to translate very well in the NHL, particularly in the playoffs.
I think, in all honesty, there's a lot of teams that are having goalie troubles right now. And it's very easy to see that. And there's going to be quite a few goalies that are on the free agency list this season or this offseason. So I would not be surprised if Colorado ends up throwing their name into that bid and trying to get one of those goalies to kind of one up Georgiev and what they have right now. And, you know, to relate it back to some of the local teams here, Matt, that's going to make the life of the Devils a lot harder because they need a goalie, and they are going to be competing up against some very, very good teams in order to get a goalie. I mean, I'm talking the likes of the Maple Leafs, the Oilers, the Avalanche, who all have had good play outside of the Maple Leafs, good playoff runs over the last couple of years, and of course the Avalanche winning a Stanley Cup. So goalies are going to have quite a few options before they get to the Devils, which is going to make their lives harder in trying to secure a piece that their team desperately needs.
All that does is magnify how much Martin Brodeur meant to that franchise.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
I mean, I often have drawn parallels between Martin Brodeur and his long-term contributions in goal to Mariano Rivera and his long-term contributions to the Yankees as a closer. Both positions, it's rare to have that kind of consistency for such a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look, the Rangers, I mean, yes, they did have that with Lundqvist. They did have that with Richter.
Lundqvist wasn't around for a very long time, though.
Yeah, by comparison, not even close compared to Marty.
Yeah. Again, it's rare that you have a goalie that's able to go in. What, was he 18 when he started?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, 18 and he went to the conference finals in his first season.
Right. And won the cup the year after.
I mean, we're talking about how good Richter and Lundqvist were for the Rangers. Martin Brodeur played against Richter and Lundqvist.
Right. And Ranger fans have always knocked Brodeur because head-to-head in the playoffs, yes, the Rangers did have the Devils' number the times they met. But one was only
by a slim margin, all fairness.
But in 2012, it went the other way, naturally.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying that.
Because Adam Henrique, yeah.
There was a Game 7 OT winner for the Rangers, and there was a Game 7 OT winner for the Devils. Of course,
18 years apart.
it's a bit different because the Devils go on to lose the finals. So, you know, it's historically a bit different because that goal ends up meaning a lot more for the Rangers.
Naturally, because the Rangers, of course, 1940 and all that other stuff, because it came very close to, you know, winding up with another year of futility.
And yeah.
Of course, they haven't won since. Could you imagine 80-plus years without a cup?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's already almost 60 right now for the Maple Leafs. But
Who are the most futile Original Six team? Don't let anyone tell you it's the Rangers. It's the Maple Leafs, and it's the Maple Leafs by a mile.
Oh, absolutely, because they're the only team since expansion that hasn't won.
Exactly. And you can say more cups in the Original Six era, I don't care. One cup outside of the Original Six era means a whole lot more.
Yes, especially in a year where the NHL was only a couple teams short of where it is now.
Yeah.
And also, think of it this way, and this is another problem that is probably going to continue, is that no Canadian team has won at all since Patrick Waugh was their goalie.
Yeah.
And that was the Montreal Canadiens in 1993, and they've won more cups than anybody, mostly in the Original Six era, but before the Islanders won four straight, they won four straight.
No, I mean, the Canadiens are by far the best NHL franchise of all time.
But haven't done crap in 30 years.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, you're not always going to have a great team. As we're talking right now, the Canucks just scored their first goal of the playoffs to tie the game at 1-1. And again, the Canucks are one of the best teams, I think, that Canada has sent to the playoffs in a long, long time. I mean, probably the best team that the Canadians have sent since the 2011 Canucks.
Well, yeah. Kevin Bieksa was on that team. And I think I told you this story. I must have. I keep forgetting who I tell it to.
That's, I don't think it was me.
Okay. Every holiday season, the NHL has a sample sale. So the marketing department gets all these proposed merchandise items, some of which actually wind up in stores and online, and some of them get rejected. And some of them are previews for teams in case they win, and sometimes they don't. So it became a running joke within the folks at the office that we would pick up a lot of these merchandise items for teams. Let's say Dallas Stars 2008 Stanley Cup champions. They lost to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But also this big flag that depicts the Vancouver Canucks as a 2011 champion over the Bruins. So one of my buddies puts one and drapes his cubicle with the damn thing. Now, before every season, a whole bunch of players, which I took a lot of crap for, I'll tell you that story in a minute, we get a bunch of players to do some preseason interviews and some photo shoots and stuff like that in the office. Kevin BX is one of them. And he walks by our part of the office, and he takes a look at this and he stares at it. We didn't win. What's this? We had to explain to him.
Yeah.
But it's like, and he was like, oh my God, this is really weird. So we had this snack table that was missing its legs, but it was a snack table that depicted a Ranger jersey. So we, every former Ranger that came into the office was asked to sign it. Messier signed it. Don Maloney signed it. A few other people. Hank walks by. Hey, Hank! I took so much crap for that because he was an active player. You're not supposed to ask for autographs. But in the locker room, you're not supposed to ask for autographs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I've been covering the team for covering the Rangers for 20 years. He knows me. So I took a lot of heat for that. But somewhere in that office, Hank's autograph is on that table.
That is definitely cool to see.
Yeah. But I said, every Ranger who walks into the office we ask to sign this, could you? I said, absolutely. Yeah, no problem.
I mean, they're people. That's what you got to remember.
Yeah. But also, Hank's, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, even as an Islander fan, you found it hard to hate him.
He's a good guy.
Yeah. But, yeah, absolutely. So, that was a lot of fun. And, you know, and I had to walk it back and say, oh, it's sometimes better ask forgiveness than permission.
Yeah.
I had to ask forgiveness.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So that's my little story about life in the NHL office. Robitaille walking by. And we had this wall where the monitors were that was made up of shafts of hockey sticks. But, you know, Robitaille walks by. Ah, they're all retail sticks. I said, 600 NHL goals just walked by. But yeah, good memories. And any Mark Messier, hey guys, what's up? Yeah, always ready to say hi. But anyway, continuing on the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs for that matter too. Always most exciting. And yeah, sometimes you sleepwalk through the regular season and just say one of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Now, of course, if you have a team that actually has to struggle to get into the playoffs, that's not necessarily the case, which is what we've had to do with the Islanders and the Devils, of course, fading the way they did. But
well, Devils were faded since the beginning of the season, to be completely honest.
Yeah, the Devils had a lot of things working against
them. I don't even know if they spent any time inside of the playoff picture this season.
Good question. I don't believe they have. Getting rid of Lindy Ruff, I don't think was a solution to anything.
No, I think that was I can't believe that quote that came from Tom Fitzgerald of everyone's hired to be fired at some point. Like,
well, that is a fundamental tenet of coaching in general.
No, I understand that, but that's not something that you should be promoting, you know? Like, that's something that goes without saying, but
right.
The fact that you say that as your, you know, like, this is my reason.
And you don't do it to somebody like Lindy Ruff.
No, especially with how many people were praising him. I mean, like, for God's sake, people...
He kept that team competitive when they had... Look what they did last year.
People were saying he was a Jack Adams-type candidate last year.
He was.
You can't... And again, a coach can be great one year and bad the other year. That's absolutely possible.
Look at Pierre Laviolette.
Peter Laviolette. Look at Gerard Gallant.
Yeah.
Eastern Conference Final one year, out in seven in the first round the next year. But for that to be your quote, no. And Lindy Ruff was not the problem with that team.
Definitely not. As a matter of fact, he was one of the pluses. Well, you know what that tells you? It goes back to what you were saying about the goalies. If you got a GM like that, and you're a goalie looking for a job.
Yeah. Yeah. And goalies, one of the most notoriously streaky positions in any sport.
Right, which again magnifies what Martin Brodeur was able to do.
Yeah.
Yes, he had great defensemen. He had a great system.
And he played in an era in which scoring was down anyways.
The dead puck era. But the Devils were one of the reasons why, because of the neutral zone trap. And the fact that Marty played the puck better than anybody else, like an additional defenseman. That they had to rewrite the rules, put that trapezoid in strictly for him.
Yeah.
I mean, watching Marty play the puck the way he did was always, you know, why can't more people do that? Patrick Roy, in the 0-1 final, Roy in goal for Colorado, okay? He tried to do that a couple of times, say, I'm as good as Marty, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he got burned a couple of times. Everybody's saying, stay in the net. That's where you're best.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to be Marty. I think the Devils just ran out of steam in that series, and they went seven. You know, they had won them the year before, and, you know, God bless Colorado and Patrick Roy getting another ring. But, you know, the Devils went as far as they could in that. And, of course, a couple of years later, they won again.
Yeah. I mean, they had great coaching, great everything, to be honest, in those runs.
Yeah. And, you know, meanwhile, the Islanders and the Rangers at the time were just flailing. They were doing nothing.
Yeah. I mean, specifically the Islanders. The Rangers were trying to rebuild from their 94 win. But, again, yeah, they had invested so much into that win that it was almost impossible to do that.
No, that's exactly what happened. Because in their last decent run was 97, where they got swept by Philadelphia in the conference final. Young Eric Lindros, Prescott Stevens hit.
Yeah.
And then they went 7 years without a playoff spot. And yeah, when Gretzky played his last game, it was garbage time because they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, Gretzky would have kept going if not for Darius Kasparaitis taking a run at him.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he should have kept going. I like the time in which he retired.
Well, at the time, he was still – his goals totals kept going down, but his assist totals were so high, he was still among the league leaders in points.
Yeah.
So, you know, who wouldn't want Gretzky on the team just for that reason alone? But I remember those years, those last couple of years with Gretzky, where they even brought Robitaille in. Because Gretzky's favorite position was behind the net, like everybody knows. He basically played the X lacrosse style,
mm-hmm.
Okay, with feeds out to the front. So they figured, hey, let's bring Robitaille in because he knows how to take passes from Gretzky. He did it in L.A. Didn't work. By that point, everybody had figured it out. So even Gretzky's points started to go down, too. So the team was going nowhere. And he had really hurt his neck with that run that Kasparaitis took at him. So he said, that's it. It's time.
Yeah.
But there you go. There's. I still think that natural hat trick against Florida's first year there when they went to the conference final was probably his best moment as a Ranger. But his time as a Ranger was relatively short. And
towards the end of his career, yeah, anyways.
Yep, he finished as a Ranger. But, you know, can you imagine him earlier? Well, hey, they won Lindros, but Philly already had the done deal. But Lindros, we know his career got ruined by Scott Stevens.
Yeah.
And Scott Stevens. I asked Scott Stevens, remember the lockout, 05-06, when they came out with the rule changes afterward? And Stevens was pretty close to retirement at that point, but when the rule changes came out, that was it. He made his decision, he's done. And I asked him directly, because he was assistant with the Devils, I said, did the rule changes affect your decision? He just smiled.
I mean, it changes the way that changes your game. Because that rule also changes skating entirely inside of hockey. All of a sudden, skating and skill matters so much more than knowledge and physical play.
Yeah. And they wanted that, but I also think something was lost, too.
Something was lost, but I think it's much healthier for the game because now you're seeing the fact that it was the step towards skill, okay? And that's the natural progression. And then the next step is for skill and size.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing now with guys like Matthew Tkachuk, Brady Tkachuk. I think you'll be able to throw in Lafreniere's name in a couple of years. I mean, you know, Nathan MacKinnon is not a small guy. Like, let's be clear. A guy like Jack Hughes, could he play 15 years ago, maybe it would be harder. It'd be a lot harder for him. But Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon, you know, the stars of the league right now, would be just as good.
Yeah.
In the dead puck era.
Yeah, but the dead puck era, when you only had 200 point scorers in the entire league.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
Their point totals would be lower, but they'd still be elite. They'd still be the top end of the league.
Would Gretzky be Gretzky in the dead puck era? There wouldn't be a dead puck era if Gretzky were in his prime.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's other things. I mean, I see people... Oh, knocked the mic off the stand for a second. I see people say that the whole thing about the fact that
the screw came out.
Okay, well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, you may have to hand hold it for a little while.
All right, well, it is what it is. You see people do talk about the fact that Gretzky's point totals are not like what they should be, that they were inflated by the era that he played in. And yes, that is true, but that's also true about any player at any game at any point in time. I will say that there have been statistics pulled up to show the adjusted point totals for any given season. Gretzky is still at the top of pretty much all of them.
Yeah, he's not going to have 200-point seasons, but it's still going to be a lot.
Still going to be no other player comparable to him. I mean, that list, that top 10 of adjusted points per season, there's three players on it, Matt. I'm sure you can guess all three.
Gretzky, Lemieux, and Bossy?
McDavid. Gretzky, I think Bossy is the next step on that. It's either Bossy or Jaeger.
Jaeger. The one thing about Bossy, and he did one thing that Gretzky did not do. He scored 50 or more 9 years in a row.
Yeah.
And I still remember when Jaeger scored 50 for the Rangers, they put out a poster, gave it as a giveaway at the Garden. And they were playing the Islanders that night, and I'm in the press room. Chris King walks by, and they said, "Can you believe this?" Yeah, they should put a footnote saying, "But Bossy did it 9 years in a row," because it was Jaeger, Hadfield, and Graves, the only 50 goal scorers for the Rangers up to that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to do. Kreider got close.
Yeah,
I think how many did Kreider end with? It was the 2021 season, 2021. I'll just pull up Kreider's page. It's going to make it easier. Because I remember Kreider got close because he was also leading the league in power play goals. Oh, no, he did. 21-22, 52 goals for Chris Kreider.
Okay, so add another one to the total.
So he's the most recent as well.
Yeah.
I don't think he definitely didn't get there this year. I think Panarin and Kreider were close.
Yeah, Panarin fell with 48, 40.
Something like that. Yeah. Kreider had 39 this season.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about a renaissance just at the end of your season. I mean, Kreider is peaking. I don't know if he'll be able to hold up next year. I mean, I want to see how he ages into his next year.
It wasn't too long ago that Kreider was considered a question mark.
I think that was because of the coaching, though. I think that was because of Torts. I just don't think Kreider was a Torts player, which surprises me.
Another guy who wears that as welcome.
Yeah, but Matt, like, you would think he would be a Torts player because he's 6'3", 230 pounds, and plays like a dog.
Yeah, you would think, but maybe it was some other personality clash.
It might have been. I mean, because Kreider's a leader. I was kind of shocked when he didn't get the captain, but I mean, Trouba's also a great leader. Speaking of 50 goal scorers, Panarin did fall one short at 49.
Yeah.
So, make no mistake, this is the greatest regular season, an individual regular season of any player or any Ranger ever. The only player that I think you can argue that, I'll say non-goalie player, because I think a lot of Lundqvist's season and Shesterkin's seasons could be said better, but the only season of a skater that compares to Artemi Panarin's season this year is Leach's 101 points. Besides that,
as a defenseman,
there's no one else in the conversation. Panarin put up 120 points this season, 71 assists, 49 goals.
That's, yeah, no Ranger is even close. I mean, yeah, Graves, but Leach as a defenseman, well, that's just points how great Leach was.
Yeah. But this is, Panarin should be the difference maker of this playoffs. And I'll go into this rant for just a couple of minutes because it was Panarin staying quiet in the previous couple of years as a Ranger to why they did not have a lot of success, Matt.
Yeah.
So you can point to 16 points in 20 games in their Eastern Conference final run at a -5. Okay? So that's not what you're expecting from Panarin. You're expecting a lot more production. You know, above a point per game or at a point per game, something like that.
Yeah.
And then it was 2 assists in 7 games against the Devils. And that was a huge talking point, is the fact that he only had 2 assists. And All of a sudden, he comes out of that series, puts up the best regular season of his career, and now scores is at a goal already in the playoffs. So that's something that he did not do last year. He only got six of them in 20 games, so now he's already at one. Lafreniere went 007 last year against the Devils. He already has an assist from that play I was talking about. So again, there's a lot of positive signs for the Rangers, and I'm honestly glad that they have this matchup against the Capitals, because I think it's going to give them the confidence that they need to build on top of, because they need a reset from last year.
Well, that also does play into 1994 and that first round victory over the Islanders.
Yeah.
Because that was one-sided.
Yeah.
And that, I think, especially after getting, after the previous, this was a very good team for the previous couple of years as well. And they didn't do very well. Maybe 93, they didn't make the playoffs, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
They didn't make the playoffs the year before, and 92, I believe, they won the President's Trophy. Lost first round. So, yeah, that definitely restored their confidence and put them in a much better position, especially when they faced the Devils in the conference finals. But even then, everybody was very concerned because the Devils took a 3-2 series lead, and of course, Messier with the guarantee. We all know how that story went.
Yeah.
But
I will say the Islanders actually made it to the Eastern Conference Finals in the 93 playoffs.
Yes, that was the last deep playoff run they had until those last couple of years against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, they lost 4-1 to the Habs, who ended up winning the entire thing.
Well, as a matter of fact, they didn't win another playoff series until 2016.
Yeah, from that point forward.
Yeah.
And Tavares, breaking that curse, as ironic as that is in hindsight.
We don't need you.
Yeah, I honestly, another thing, and Matt, this is kind of like a my generation kind of point, because you didn't have this when you were growing up, but fan accounts are a huge part of sports now, and a part of like sports discussion on like Instagram specifically. And you will have like all of these different like fan specific teams. Mm-hmm. So like there's going to be a ton of fans of the Maple Leafs, just because they're the biggest market in all of the NHL.
This is true.
And so
people don't believe it, but especially when I was working there, I kept telling people, everybody thinks the Rangers this, the Rangers that.
Nope.
Well, Hedrick Lundqvist could walk down Fifth Avenue and nobody would recognize him. Nobody on the Maple Leafs could do that on Yonge Street in Toronto.
Yeah. And because of that, there's a ton of, Maple Leaf fan accounts. And when they do these, like, different lists of, like, my most hated teams, they'll always have, like, of course they're going to have Boston low down, they're going to have the Habs down low. They always have the Islanders in the lowest tier. And it's for no other reason besides the fact that the Islanders always dog on the Maple Leafs whenever they get a chance.
Yes.
And honestly,
Darcy Tucker.
I hate that Maple Leafs fans hate the Islanders, okay? Because you have no reason to hate the Islanders. You should know that what happened was a scumbag thing. That Tavares coming to your team is a scumbag thing. You can love him, you can appreciate him, but you can also understand that the Islanders fans will never accept him back.
Yeah. Because, and again, I'll rewind back the story for the benefit of the non-hockey fans out there, because at the trade deadline, when the Islanders were saying, Fisher cut bait, dude, okay, are you going to sign with us or are you not? If you're going to sign, we'll keep you. If you're not, we'll trade you and see what we can get back. And then if you want to come back in the offseason, we'll talk again. He didn't do that. So the Islanders stuck with him. So then he leaves and the Islanders come up with nothing. That's the problem. It's not that he left. It's because he left with the Islanders empty-handed.
Yeah.
And the Islanders had success afterwards without him, which is one of the reasons why the We Don't Need You chant came about. And why when
or the Barzy's better.
Yeah, or the 1,000-point scored in UBS Arena and people
gets booed. Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, that was a rotten move. Now, of course, it goes back further than that. I mentioned Darcy Tucker, a nasty hit he threw on Michael Pekka during that series that went seven games, which turned it around and knocked Michael Pekka out for the half the following year, too. When they picked up Pekka, that was supposed to be a major turning point for the franchise. And yes, it got back in the playoffs. But they were very competitive in that playoff series, even without Pekka.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a cheap hit. It reminded everybody what Dale Hunter did to Pierre Turgeon in 93. And in 93, with Turgeon in the lineup against Montreal, that series doesn't go five games. Okay, so yeah. And one of the reasons why Pot Van sucks to Ranger fans is because of that hit he threw on Ulf Nilsson. It was in February.
Oh, that's the only reason it's a thing.
Yeah, but that year, the Rangers went to the final against the Habs. And a lot of Ranger fans felt that if they had Nilsson, they might have done better in that series, may have won it.
Well, that's the whole idea.
Yeah. And they
blamed, they no doubt would have done better. Winning it, that's another conversation.
That's what I'm saying. I still don't think you would have beaten Montreal. Not with that team. But, you know what? You know, a bunch of what-ifs come into play. And, of course, you know, the Rangers, since 1940, they went to the final in 72. They went to the final in 79. And, of course, 94. And that's it. So
No. 2014.
I'm talking about between 1994.
Yeah,
2014 after that. But I'm saying is that they didn't have a lot of chances at the Cup. So when they had the chance, they got that far, and they couldn't do it because they were a man short. Of course, Poffin's going to get blamed. It's the only reason why. I'm sure there have been a lot of hits thrown on each other over the years between the Ranger Islander rivalry, but that one hit will stick around Ranger fans' minds forever, even if they weren't born yet at the time.
Yeah, well, as it should. I mean, and again, I like the conversation about talking about, you know, original six teams that have success in the modern era. If I'm being completely honest, this is not a conversation, and I'm just specifically going off the Islanders-Maple Leafs like mini rivalry. The Islanders are a better franchise than the Maple Leafs.
Because the Islanders started from scratch.
One back to back to back to back.
And not only that, they did it in an era where expansion teams had none of the advantages. The Vegas Golden Knights were in much better position to get good quickly than the Islanders were. The Islanders, before the
entry draft, the advanced stats, the scouting, so much more.
One of the reasons why they started doing that was because they realized adding expansion teams that were going to be patsies for the first 20 years of their existence wasn't a good idea. I mean, they got lucky with the Panthers because Bill Torrey was recruited from the Islanders to build that team. But the Panthers had early success, and they said, wait a minute, this is a good thing. We're going into new markets with good teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lightning, the same thing. They had early success. So, you know.
Stars.
Well, Stars were an existing team that just moved.
Oh, okay.
You know, they were the Minnesota North Stars.
Yeah.
But they had Mike Modano even then. Mike Modano came up in Minnesota.
Scoring update, by the way. Nashville up 2-1 over the Canucks.
So, I mean, the Stars were in position, like the Avalanche, okay? They come from Quebec with Joe Sakic on the team.
Oh, they came with an amazing team.
Yeah, and they
win the Cup first round, yeah.
Yep, their first year in Colorado, and the Nordiques fans have never forgiven them for since. But Quebec City, remember, Quebec was a WHA team.
Yeah.
And joined the NHL as part of the merger. But Quebec City is a much smaller city than Montreal. And it speaks exclusively French. There's no bilingual in Quebec City. So, and the businesses there, they felt that the whole business base wasn't sufficient. That's one of the reasons why they never got a team back.
Probably won't.
And, yep, they probably won't. Because the markets in Canada, you know, they're saturated. Winnipeg, okay, they got a team back. But only because they had some ownership, the True North Group. As a matter of fact, every time the Canadian National Anthem is played, well, True North, strong and free, they yell, True North!
Yeah.
Because of that. Because thank you for bringing back the Winnipeg Jets. But then, of course, yeah, it's another thing we need to talk about. the Coyotes, the original Winnipeg Jets, who were WHA as well.
Yeah.
And that was a bad move.
But it's just, it's that deal. I mean, I can't get past the side of it where you expect the Tempe Group to pay so much money for that arena, and you expect the taxpayers to help you out. If it was a more reasonable deal, I can see a world in which they are building that arena right now and the Coyotes are staying there. Because this would never have been a conversation if that arena bill got through. Okay? Right. I think it's mismanagement. I don't think it's the fact that Arizona is not a hockey state. I think it is. I think that you will eventually see hockey go back to Arizona.
I remember, first of all, naturally, the NHL expanding southward. Nashville was the perfect example of bringing hockey to a fan base that barely knew what it was and having success with it. But in Dallas, one little side project I had as a web producer that dealt primarily with the teams was that the Stars had started to open up rinks. You know, they started to open up ice facilities all over the Dallas area.
Yeah.
Because they were starting, they wanted to build up the game beyond just the NHL team. They wanted to build it up with the kids. And I remember building up the websites for all those. There were five of them. And this is the type of thing. That's why I liked what Dallas was doing. They were really trying to put roots down there. And same thing, Arizona. I believe there's at least one active NHL player that's from Arizona. Am I right?
Do you want to take a guess at who it is?
Who is it?
Okay, I'll give you a hint. He's a top five player in the league.
There you go. And I'm still drawing a blank.
Auston Matthews.
There you go. Auston Matthews from Arizona.
69 goals.
And there you go. Okay?
And honestly, the fact that he scored 69 goals, still underrated. Because people don't respect his defensive game. As much as I hate the Leafs, God, that he's such a good player. I mean, he is so much more than that franchise deserves.
One of the ironies is that Tavares doesn't end up being the star there. Auston Matthews is.
Oh, yeah. He's not even the second or third star.
Yeah.
Because you still have why am I blanking on names right now? Mitch Marner. And you still have, I'm blanking on the other guy's name as well. Scored 103 points this season. Has a brother that plays for the Blue Jackets. I know what Nylander is the other okay. one. So again, you talk about the core four is what they call it in Toronto. He's the fourth player on that. Because he's not a good skater anymore, you know? He's not fast. He's great in the face-off circle. He's a great shot, great hockey IQ, can do a lot of stuff like that. Just not fast enough to compete.
And speaking of 100-point scorers, Nylander, actually 98.
Oh, okay.
William Nylander, but hey, close. But they have 900-point scorers this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like when you talk about the Maple Leafs, you talk about this core four, they were building with plans for the salary cap to go up, and because of that, you know, these big contracts between Tavares, Nylander, Marner, and Matthews would all of a sudden look a lot smaller, mm-hmm. and then COVID hits.
Right.
And then your entire outlook looks so much different, and they have not been able to build out a defense because of it. They have not been able to build out a bottom six. I mean, in all honesty, Matt, they need a culture change inside of that team, and I don't know
if they tried that.
But they tried.
Ring Lou Lamoriello, remember yeah. that? Ring Mike yeah. Babcock in, remember that?
Well, Babcock went that was awful. That was never going to be the right move. I mean, I you could say that from the beginning because Babcock just had so many red flags of being an old generation hockey coach with the very newest generation. You know, he was never going to be a good coach for Mitch Marner. But I don't know. Like, people talk about the fact that Matthews does not have that, you know, killer drive. Is that true? I don't think that's true. I think he is a top competitor. But I also think that he is been worn out, one, by the media inside of Toronto, and two, by the lack of success, because he has to carry a team that is not equipped for the playoffs.
And every year, look, being the Toronto Maple Leafs is like the New York Yankees in baseball. Expected to go to the World Series. The goal is to win the Stanley Cup every year, and they're going on 55 years now, 56, 57 years, without doing so.
It's the expectation of the Yankees, but you're not even the Yankees of your own sport. Those are the Canadians.
Yes, and you're not even... Look, the Yankees, except for last year, obviously, when they really stunk it up, but the Yankees routinely are among the top five teams in baseball. Okay. Can you say that, the Maple Leafs, right now?
No.
Not even close.
No. They have never been top. They have never been top five with this iteration of their lineup. And just to go back, okay, you're saying that Austin Matthews does not have that drive. He's not a playoff player, okay? So look at his points in the playoffs. Okay, so you start off in he's been in the playoffs every year since 2016-2017. His first playoffs, six games played, 5 points, four of them goals, plus two, averaging 20 minutes of ice time. Okay, that's a great stat line. He takes a step back, 2017-2018, seven games played, one goal, one assist, minus four, averaging 17 minutes of ice time. That's not great. 2018-2019, seven games played, five goals, one assist, 6 points, minus three. Again, could be better, but five goals in seven games in the playoffs? How many other players can do that? Not a lot.
Okay, right.
You go to the next year. You know, this is COVID, so this is a little bit different. Five games played, two goals, four assists, 6 points, plus one, averaging 25 minutes of ice time. That's a great stat line.
Well, it tells you how thin the team was.
Exactly. 2020-2021. You know, okay, he's not getting enough assists. He played seven games, one goal, four assists, 5 points, plus one, 23 minutes of ice time. And a 55% face-off win percentage. Then you go to the next year, 2021-2022. Seven games played, four goals, five assists, 9 points, plus one, 22 minutes per night.
Not bad at all.
9 points in seven games, four of which are goals. And I know which series that was. That was up against the Lightning. Mm-hmm. Probably was the highest point producer in that entire series. Probably scoring the most goals as well. And you're competing up against Kucherov, Point. I mean, they would have still had Pilat at that point. They would have still have Killorn. They would have had a ton of guys. And he drops that kind of performance on back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, on a great defense and a great goaltender, four goals. And then it gets better. Next year, rematch the Lightning in the first round, 11 games played overall, five goals, six assists, 11 points, plus point two, 22 minutes of ice time. Okay? Austin Matthews is a outstanding playoff performer.
And has grown into it, yeah.
And has gotten better over time, okay? The failure of the Maple Leafs is not because of Austin Matthews. You have one of the top three players in the league, okay? Mm-hmm. I would throw Connor McDavid as your obvious number one. I'd throw Nathan MacKinnon as your two. And I think Austin Matthews has to be the three.
What about Kucherov?
Four.
Even though he led the league in points this year.
Yeah. It's 69 goals. 69 goals. That's all I have to say.
Yep.
69 goals. Okay. I would put Kucherov in my... actually higher in MVP voting than Austin Matthews because of the fact that he's led the league. Did he lead the league in points or was that MacKinnon? Was it Kucherov? It was Kucherov.
It was Kucherov. 144, MacKinnon 140.
Yeah, so... Led the league in points without having as much support, okay?
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. But I'd say Matthews above Kucherov, one, because I think Matthews' defensive game is better, and two, because he scored 69 frickin' goals in one season. It was one away from 70. 70 goals.
In an era where it's not as easy to do.
No. So again, you have this just absolute superstar, and you should have some of the supporting cast. If he does not get a Stanley Cup in his career, that might go down as one of the biggest tragedies in NHL history. I mean, because again, right now what you're comparing him to...
You know where he may end up in that case?
Where?
Somewhere other than Toronto.
But Matt, he signed that extension. I mean, let me pull it up on Cap Friendly right now. Cap Friendly, by the way, if you are a hockey nerd and you like contracts like I do, go to Cap Friendly. It is a website you can spend hours on just looking through team contracts and stuff like that. It is great. Has all the cap hits and stuff like that. If you want to play armchair GM and just look at your team and the current cap situation, again, capfriendly.com. I'm not sponsored by them or anything. I just think it's a fantastic website.
Well, you got how many? You got six teams with no cap space. Leafs, Lightning, Golden Knights, Avalanche, Habs, and Canucks.
All right, so Matt, he is signed through the 27-28 season. And next year, he gets that $13.2 million contract.
Okay.
So
again, you're counting on growth in the now the cap will grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, unless we get another COVID pandemic. But
so right now, the way it's looking, 27-28 would be three. It's one, two,
but,
three, four.
But what you were talking about with no cap room, okay, you got this year alone, you got, because I'm looking at the same thing you are, Austin Matthews at 11.6, Tavares at 11 even.
Yep.
Marner at 10.9. And Nylander at 6.9, which is a steal, but he goes up to 11.5 next year.
Yeah. So, again, you're talking, if the Maple Leafs do not get serious about playoffs in the next couple of years, they will lose Matthews, okay? Because I think what Matthews did is great. He signed a semi-long-term contract. 4 years is a good amount of time, and he's going to be 30 by that time that contract is expiring.
Which means still productive.
So he is entering the prime of his career. Yeah. You know, the age range of like 28 to 33 kind of is where you expect players to really be peaking before they start coming back down. So Austin Matthews, especially at the age of 30 exactly, should be at the pinnacle of his career. So he could go to any team he wanted.
That's right.
And he's going to be a UFA, obviously has a no-move clause in there right now. But again, it's really weird to look at the fact that John Tavares is making $11 million and Mitch Marner is making $10.9 million, and I don't feel they're living up to those contracts, specifically Tavares. I mean, as weird as it sounds and as great this is going to hear to Islanders fans' ears, I don't think Toronto has gotten anywhere near enough value from Tavares for his contract. I mean, you're talking about...
I think the Islanders got a lot more. He helped transform that franchise.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
But you're talking
about... He has not had the same impact in Toronto, no.
No. But even his best season was 2018-2019, his first year there, 88 points. But since then, it was 88, 60, 50, 76, 80, 65.
Nope.
65 points for $11 million? No, thank you. You know what $11 million is getting you on the Rangers? Double that.
Yeah.
Double that.
You get what's Panarin making?
A little over 11.
Okay.
Like $65,000 over 11 or something like that. So that's one of the worst contracts on the entire team. I mean, do they even have anything in the buyout? No, they don't even have anything in the buyout. So, you know, it is what it is. And as I'm on this website, as I normally am, I'm just going to go over and look at the Islanders just to remind people of the kind of timeline I'm talking about. Anders Lee, $7 million. That ends in 25-26, so you're going to have two more seasons of that after this current one. J.G. Pageau, $5 million, same timeline. Kyle Palmieri will have one more season at $5 million. And those are really the big three contracts that I talk about that the Islanders need to get off of the books before they can really get serious about anything, honestly.
But even then... Okay, you got Barzal. The highest paid player on the team is Barzal at $9,150,000. Horvat's making $8.5 million. Lee's making $7 million. which, you know, again, he's definitely tapered off at the age of 33. But he's got two more years of that. And Nelson's making six. I mean, nobody's really made, I mean, the Leafs have, you know, four guys at 10+.
Yeah.
Which means they've got no room to move.
Yeah. And the Islanders team, I mean, specifically Barzy and Horvat's contract, they're going to grow into the cap hit very well, which is why I think the Islanders are positioned well. The only question is, can they get a guy that will really take them to the next level? Which, you know, there aren't a lot of players like that.
Well, the other thing, too, is I'm just looking at here. The Islanders, they don't have a lot of cap. Based on this past year's numbers, they don't have a lot of cap room. But they've got a whole bunch of RFAs coming up for next year. Wahlstrom being one of them. Holmstrom being another.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Kyle McLean,
yep.
He'll get a new contract, but it won't be a lot. I mean, none of those players are really going to be...
Yeah.
I mean, but another positive for the Islanders is you get Cal Clutterbuck. I said it again.
Clutterbuck
and Matt Martin. You get those two contracts off the book. I don't see any world in which they re-sign. I mean, 34 and 36 between the two of them. And that's going to be a little over $3 million in cap space.
Sorokin made only $4 million this past year. He goes up to $8.25 million next year.
Yeah, so that is a huge contract boost. Another great thing for the Islanders is you have another year of Noah Dobson at $4 million. And the production he has right now is way above that. But yeah, overall, Islanders in a good place, but it's still just about that one signing, that one goal scorer that they need to get. And I've said it a couple of times throughout the season so far, and I will update that. Again, it's a Leon Draisaitl or who's that guy in the Wild, Matt? The Russian player from the Wild. I'll just pull it up. Why am I so bad with names tonight?
Same here.
Maybe it's because I drove all the way from my house. I'm quite tired at this point. Minnesota Wild. Kaprizov, the Thrill.
Yeah.
That's a kind of player that you need to sign if you're the Islanders. So he will be 29 years old in the 26-27 season when his UFA contract with the Wild is over. Now, again, the Wild are one of those teams in Kaprizov in the same situation as Austin Matthews, where you don't want to spend the prime of your career playing on a team that is not competing, okay? And over the last, well, in Kaprizov's tenure with the NHL, the Islanders have been a better franchise than the Wild.
Yeah, and UFA in 2026-27. Now, that's 3 years down the road. Now, what can the Islanders do to improve immediately?
To improve immediately, I still think it's about rounding out your team down low. Because, again, Matt, I don't... So, coming up into this next year, I don't know who they possibly could get to make a big splash. Because, you know, you look at your free agents, okay? So Sam Reinhart is the has the most points out of any free agent. He's going to get re-signed by Florida. Mm-hmm. Steven Stamkos, okay, he has 81 points. Do you try to sign a guy like Stamkos? Maybe. I mean, it's possible.
How old is he again?
34.
Oh.
So again,
short term, but we take it.
Yeah. So, you know, here's an interesting name: Jake Guentzel. Jake Guentzel is definitely a kind of guy that the Islanders would need, but there would need to be a couple of moves to add on top of that. So other guys
against them right now.
Yeah, well, other guys that are towards that higher end of the list. I mean, Jonathan Marchessault, but I don't see him going anywhere but Vegas, considering he won a Conn Smythe with them last year.
Yeah, I see these UFAs, and a lot of these guys are up there. I mean, Adam Henrik is on this list.
Yeah, at 51 points. So.
That 2012, the one get the overtime winner for the Devils, 12 years ago.
So I mean, maybe you get like a combination of guys like, I don't know, maybe like a Sean Monahan and a Jake Guentzel, and you try to make something work off of that. I mean, essentially, with the current UFA situation, I think the Islanders would have to make a sign a couple of teams before they really get anything. But I do, Matt, I do want to check what kind of cap space they're going to be working with next season, because I believe the cap is going up to 87.7. So that's, of course, 87,700,000 for the 24-25 season. And with all the contracts coming off the books and with the additional cap boost, the Islanders are going to have $9.8 million, and they need to re-sign, or they need to sign in general, 1, 2, 3, 4 players. So, you know, it's a good amount of change to work with. Actually, hold up. That is with... they actually have 6.3 to re-sign 3 players. So they really don't have a lot to work with.
No, that means somebody's going to be the odd man out.
Well, no. No one's going to get cut. And it's possible that they... I mean, because McLean is probably going to come in for less than $1 million. But it does mean that their free agency signings are going to be very limited. And again, it's unfortunate that the Islanders are kind of staring down 2 more years of mediocrity after this. But hey... that does give you a chance to kind of look forward and just try to sign maybe a young guy, maybe a risk that you just try to develop over the next couple of years. It's unfortunate that their prospects don't look as good as a team like the Rangers or a team like the Devils or the Ducks or something like that, because they would have a good runway to work with. But again, it's really that 2 to 3 year timeline once they get those bigger contracts off the books.
Okay, so it's 11:56, and we do, of course, have some games that we are going to be broadcasting for you coming this week.
And do you want me to run them down real quick?
Well, the one in particular is that Stanford game for women's lacrosse.
Absolutely. So I will be on the call for that one.
That's on Thursday.
That is indeed on Thursday. I will be on the call for that game. Where did this tab go? There it is.
That's an afternoon game, by the way.
Yeah, so Tuesday, April 23rd, we're going to have baseball versus Manhattan. George is going to be the main voice for one.
Okay, so we're getting that midweek game in. I was hoping we would.
Yeah, and we are going to have another WSB debut. Samantha, don't remember her last name right now, but of course he will get that on air. So George will be the play-by-play, Samantha doing some color, and then also play-by-play for the middle three.
Now, one thing we do have to do, because they've been so red-hot and white-hot, is maybe sneak some softball in there, too. Are we going to get some games?
Yeah. I definitely want to. Yeah. Thursday, women's lacrosse versus Stanford. I will be on that call, 2:45 airtime. I will double-check that is right, because athletics consistently changes those. And then on Saturday, men's lacrosse versus Hofstra and
Make
Matt
or
Mankiewicz.
Break. Yeah, I got that
will
one.
Be on that call. I might be in color. I'm not exactly sure what I'll be doing on Saturday.
Okay. So... yeah, busy week, but getting that midweek game for baseball, because, like I said earlier, the midweek games don't seem very important compared to the conference games, but that's where you discover what you've got for a stretch run. And yes, I do believe that Colin Ryan proved himself with that 8-8 performance on Saturday, so that's another option that Matt Sank has. And the other fact of the matter is, against a team like Towson, he didn't have to stretch out his bullpen very much. So, again, all of it points to good things happening on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So George is going to have, hopefully a pleasant game to call against the Jaspers.
Hopefully a warm one as well.
Yes, because today wasn't too bad. Yesterday was better. The only thing I'm concerned about really is rain.
Yeah.
I still remember being in that squall a couple of years back. But, and again, because of that whole New Jersey NJIT thing, the Seawolves played right through it. And I remember asking Matt Sink afterward, what about that rain? So we never even thought about stopping the game. So there was a torrent. A fan lent me her umbrella. Absolute craziness. Okay. It is 11:59 and time to call a night here on the sports section. Many thanks, of course, to Kevin Broderick, sports director here at WSB. I'm Matt Mankiewicz. And again, we shall see you on Tuesday. George on the call. for Stony Brook Seawolves baseball. And then women's lacrosse and men's lacrosse rounding out your week. This is WSB Stony Brook. Good night, everybody.